Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to another edition of the program, Dare to Be Different. It's just wonderful to have all of you tuning in, whether it's via the audio streaming Midway 1548 in Satellite Islam, and to those of you tuning to listen to us via the DSTV Bouquet 826 and on many other devices. And it's a wonderful, wonderful morning this morning. Alhamdulillah, we're truly blessed. Walking to studio this morning, took a brisk walk, and brilliant sunshine, and yes, spring is in the air. And this morning we've got a wonderful guest, and no stranger to Radio Islam. She's always so full of advice, full of warmth, and always sharing with us. And that's Kerry Goodwin. Hi, good morning, Kerry.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Yes, and I know you're bubbly, and already spring is in the air, and we know that 1st of September, officially in South Africa, it's the beginning of spring and Arbor Day. And the weather has just been brilliant for the last 2 days. But I must say to you that about, was it last Monday where we had that freezing cold? So I'm not even sure if the weather is all settled.
I was going to say last Monday I thought, oh my goodness gracious me, what is happening? Are we going back into winter? And we go riding along the river, and it was just icy, icy cold. But thankfully, spring hit us with beautiful sunshine, like you said, and this morning the sunrise was gorgeous. So I just think we really are very blessed.
Yes, and talking about, spring and being gorgeous, I must say that when it came to the 1st of August, our spring, I beg your pardon, our August winds, was blowing, and I said, well, the timetable is right this year, hopefully,
yes.
God willing that everything happens, and, we had lots of wind, and, for the last couple of years, we didn't really have the August winds, was that right?
It's absolutely true. I felt exactly the same. For the last few years, we felt that our windy time has actually been more in September, and so our seasons had moved a bit later. And yet this wind, August, I mean, whether it was in town or actually driving out onto the farms, you saw, there's lots of wind, lots of felt fires. It was almost a time for the almost anticipation of the spring coming. And now I think it was a, magnificent spring day. And I think it just bodes well for a fantastic spring and summer season for our gardens.
And while we're talking about that, I also looked at an article in which I said, well, I don't think the drought has been broken in all parts of the country. We're talking about certain portions of the Eastern Cape still hasn't had rain. And we're hoping, that the season is one full of rain. What have you heard? Have you read anything about that?
I want to say, the news that I've heard has not been good. So in terms of, I've heard that we might be going back into an El Nino, which means it is a period of dryness. But I think now South Africans actually have to, and we've been learning that, we have to learn how to garden wisely and water our plants wisely and plant in zones so that when you do water, you have high water zone plants and medium water zone plants and low water zone plants. So I think slowly we've been actually adapting our lifestyle. So even if we do go into a more drier period, we've learned how to cope with it better, and we can still have beautiful, beautiful gardens as long as we practice the principles that we learned over the last 2 years, 3 years, when it has been dry.
Now, let's go back. I think it's a very good starting point, because many of us are now itching to get into our garden. Some of us have still, the old mindset to say, well, we'll only wait in garden when it comes to beginning of spring, and maybe they haven't, they've taken a bit of a back seat. And said, well, today we're going to start gardening, the weather's brilliant, and maybe we should start with the points that you've just raised, and that's about zoning. Now, many of us may or may not be aware of what zoning is. Take us through what it is and why it's so important.
Okay. So zoning is actually choosing the correct plants with the same needs, growing needs, and grouping them together in your garden. So usually when we look at our homes and our gardens, we want something that looks colorful and bright at the entrance to our homes. And so those are normally, not always, they could be high water use plants. So you group them together. So, now that we're going into spring and summer, you might be looking at things like your impatiens or your New Guinea impatiens or bounce impatiens. It could be from, if you went from your autumn, winter to spring flowering plants, it could have been your pansies. So something that shouts out and says, look at me, I'm absolutely fabulous. And they could be in pots or in containers. So there's not masses of them, but they're localized and they maybe need a little bit more water, maybe the same sun or shade conditions. So most of the ones that I've mentioned now would be semi-shade conditions. and you put those together. And then as you walk further away from your home and into your garden, with those areas that are maybe not as high focal, or areas that you still want them to look pretty, but they're not, and they would be more expansive, then you put your medium use plants. So you put things like your clivias and your roses and your agapanthus and daites, you know, more medium use to, as you're going further away, like on your pavement, then you want your low water use plants, so plants that you would hardly ever have to water. And once they've established, you probably wouldn't have to water them at all. And that might be more like your succulents or your aloes. Actually, I should have put the daites and agapanthus in that group there. So it's just looking at the plants. And, you know, the guys at the garden centers are so knowledgeable that you could go and ask them and say to them, this is the part of the garden that I'm looking for. I have so much space. And what can I group together? And it's not only grouping according to their water needs, but it's also grouping according to the amount of light that they need. Are they full sun? Are they semi-shade? Do they need afternoon sun, morning sun, that type of thing? And I think that's the way you're going to get the best joy out of your garden.
You know, it's so important that you've just discussed it with us. And now we're looking at, you know, zoning. And when we talk about zoning, it's about those garden, those plants whose needs are different from the others. Now, traditionally, you know, people would just group them all together. It doesn't matter what the plant was. And they put all them, you know, all as long as sort of it had a beauty to it, it was aesthetically, something that attracted them. But now I think it makes more sense. And from the lesson that we've learned, that if we group them, the way you've explained, it makes it so much easier in terms of watering, in terms of how you're going to look after all of that, and I think that's just brilliant. Now, just talking about, you know, these, I know one of the plants that and would be your favorite, and you know you're always speaking about shout out, and we haven't said anything about the brilliant pansies. Would they still do good at this time of the year?
So what I love about the pansies the most is in the wintertime you plant them somewhere where it's full sun, and we traditionally say under deciduous trees. And now that they're coming in, leaves are coming back onto the trees again, then they're going to be in a semi-shade environment. So if you are planting pansies in your spring and summertime, then they need to be in a more shady, so they can take morning sun but not afternoon sun. And, you know, as long as you deadhead them, they will actually just keep on growing. I always think one of my favorite places was in Steuben's Valley. They had planted pansies there in the full sun, and they lasted all the way up until December. And I was like, oh my goodness, that is just amazing. But it's because they, you know, gave them good water, nice food, and then remembered to deadhead them. So for me, I had a customer yesterday who was saying, you know, are the pansies summer pansies or winter pansies? I don't think we get a thing as summer pansies or winter pansies. We just get where they have to maybe move to now. So if you're planting them now, plant them in a semi-shade place, and they will still give you lots and lots of joy throughout the spring and into the summer.
So location is most important, especially when you're trying to site certain plants that would do well under certain conditions.
Yeah,
now,
absolutely.
Now, something that you've spoken about, and you know, just for our listeners, you spoke a difference about morning sun and the afternoon sun. You know, when people think about sun, they think, oh, it's just sunlight. But there's a difference between morning sun and afternoon sun. Take us through some of that.
Okay, so if you plant in, we always say that full sun, so any plant that is full sun needs 5 hours of sun. And it's preferably that midday sun. So if it's getting sun from 7 o'clock, because now we're talking in summer, if it's getting sun from 7 o'clock until 1 o'clock, that would be at least full day sun. But ideally it would want sun all the way up until maybe 2, 3 o'clock. Because, you know, the early morning sun is not a hot sun. So if a plant wants semi-shade, ideally we say it can take morning sun up until about 10 o'clock. And then it has to be in shade all the way up until at least 3, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Then it can go back into a sun place. And it's very, shade under trees. But you just have to watch, when you have plants that are in full shade, they very seldom go into flower because they need light and warmth to be able to stimulate that flowering. So when people say, no, they've got a very, very dark corner, it's usually on the east side of, the east side would get morning sun. So it must be on the south side of your house. You have to be careful when you're planting there, because often you don't get enough sun to make it look beautiful or to make it be full in flower, the plants that you plant there.
Thank you for that. And, you know, we now come to, you know, the period where some people may have missed out on pruning. How dangerous or how would you disadvantage a plant if you had to prune? Now, certain plants you haven't pruned, certain you had to prune. And sometimes you are looking, oh, well, I'm going to do a cleanup now. And some of them already have some of their buds on, and some of these are flowering. We're talking about the aesthetic, and we're talking about food plants or trees and so on. You know, just guidelines about pruning, because some people now want to take out the secateurs. They haven't done much, and, you know, come August has gone past, and they say, well, now we're going up, and we're going to give it a good cleanup. We're giving a haircut everywhere. And yeah, we'll go, psh, 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 you know, pruning, and before you know what's happening, tell us about some of the things that, you know, why is it not?
Yeah, I want to say, sadly, I was one of those people. I got my secateurs out yesterday morning because one of my shrubs, my Anisodontia or pink mallow, that people know that, it's been flowering the whole way through autumn and winter and into spring, and I didn't have the heart. And I think it's like a lot of customers, actually. When your plants are looking so good, you just think, I really can't give them a haircut. And then I thought, no, I have to, because you do need to refresh them for spring. So some of your woodier plants, ideally you should prune now. It's not too late. You know, your fruit trees probably should have maybe been pruned about 2 weeks ago or so, because they're already getting new pink, the blossoms are coming onto them. But when you prune, you know, especially if you're pruning trees, maybe we must start with those, and particularly your fruit trees, you just want to prune the branches that are inside and not going to get enough light. So to me, even if those have got blossoms on, ideally you do want to take them off, because it's going to give those branches that are pointing outward towards, like in a V shape and towards the light, they're going to get beautiful, more sunlight and be exposed to produce a better fruit for you. So you generally, when you're pruning, you want to try and create light in your trees so that the branches and the leaves and the blooms can be exposed to more air, more light, and be able to produce more nutrients to make your tree grow faster and healthier. So that would be for our trees, and particularly your fruit trees. And we had a customer yesterday who had forgotten to prune his roses, and he'd come in to go and get the usual, you know, what do I need to, I'm pruning my roses today. And so it just means, you know, they're going to flower a little bit later. We made beautiful headpieces in the nursery, like decoration and hats full of flowers for yesterday. And my team were like, oh, we have to go and get roses to put in our hats to make it look like spring day. But that was because we pruned our roses 6 weeks ago. So they've already got beautiful blooms and foliage on them. But if you prune in your roses now, it just means that they're only going to start flowering probably towards the end of October. So it's not the end of the world. It's just that they're going to be a little bit delayed, but maybe that's what you wanted, because they looked, you know, our roses kept flowering. I mean, nobody wanted to take a pair of secateurs to their roses in middle of June because they were still looking so good. So I think, you know, it might just make hopefully your spring and your summer last longer. I mean, so, and then the one thing I would be careful of now is for splitting. So we had one customer who was looking at her Agapanthus and her Daites. And she said, oh, they formed such beautiful clumps, and I really should have split them. But now they're almost about to start flowering. So if your perennials or some of your shrubs like that are flowering, don't do anything about splitting them, or enjoy the flowers while they last, and maybe split them at the end of when they finish flowering. So that might be, you know, December or January sometime. But it takes a lot of energy for a plant to flower. So if you go and think, oh, it looks so beautiful and I should split it because it formed a nice big clump, then the plant's going to go like, well, hang on a sec, what are you doing? I'm trying to make it look beautiful and I'm trying to flower, and here you are making me put more energy back into my roots and trying to survive. So when it comes to splitting, I think now it's not really the time to split anything, because it's all growing so lusciously and it says that spring is in the air and there are blossoms on just about every plant that you look at. But when it comes to pruning, I would definitely take a pair of, you know, and good secateurs. It's amazing when you use good secateurs, how they just, it feels like a knife slicing through butter. Your plants prune so easily. Cut out some of the inner branches so that your plant has space to grow beautiful and wide again.
And I think one of the lessons that you've just shared with us is don't be scared. If you're wanting to do something, go out there and, you know, and look at the plant and, you know, and use a good secateur, and you can cut that. And I think that's important, because sometimes what happens is that we allow the garden to overtake the whole space. And then, you know, after a couple of months, you find that, wow, what has happened? There's no more space around here because you haven't had the courage, and you didn't think you needed to prune. And I think that's important. That don't be scared. You go out there, you take a secateur, and you'd make mistakes, like you said. You definitely would make mistakes, but you'd learn from that. Is that right?
Absolutely. I mean, most of the time when you're pruning, you could actually prune up to 2/3 of the size of your bush or shrub back, and it would still grow really, really successfully. And I think that's what, but it is nerve-wracking. I mean, we pruned one of our vibrations this week, and I'm one of those very cautious people. I'm not so good with secateurs and saws and all the rest of it. And I just looked at it, and I thought, I was like, oh, it's changed my whole garden. You know, it used to be a full shade underneath, and now it's full sun because we raised the level of our viburnum to turn it more into like a tree instead of a shrub that it was. And so you also have to be conscious of that when you are pruning, you might change the light that you're allowing into your garden, but it will be short-lived. You know, within a month, our little sunny patch is going to be shady again, because the plants need the haircut, and they love the fact that you're pruning them, and then it gets to stimulate new growth. And that's what spring is all about, new growth. And the plants just can't wait to blossom and come into leaf for you. So, yeah, give them a harsh haircut and take them time to, you know, rejuvenate themselves.
If they could speak, they'd say, well, watch what I look like in a couple of months.
Exactly. That's what it's going to be like.
Now, you know, the beauty of Begupal, the queen of this month is clivias. You know, they're the most stunning and beautiful plants at the moment, and I know they've come in different colors, and there are different spaces where you have, you know, clivia shows coming up and so forth. Tell us about the clivias, and I think it's such a magnificent plant, although, you know, it's not like the roses, which gives off a good fragrance or something, but it just makes a stunning and wow plant.
Yeah. I think what with clivias is the best thing about them is that they still flower in your shady conditions. And they're actually very water-wise, and they're indigenous. So actually they have tick-tick and more tick, because they're joyous. And the fact that what I love about clivias is that, as you were saying, how they come in different colors, they seem to just have slight variations. You know, each one has almost got its own individual footprint, so it's a slightly different shade of orange. Or we've had some that have got beautiful variegated leaves. You get the peach ones now, you get the yellow ones. You know, I've had customers looking for a green one. Before, the more specific colors, you'd have to go to a clivia show and actually find those rare and beautiful ones. But then, I mean, yesterday we had a customer who bought 50. They had a shady spot in their garden. You know, they don't, obviously they would love lots of compost and well-nutritioned soil, but at the same time, they are survivors. So a lot of people find plants they can't find plants to plant in a shady spot, you know, that's particularly that flowers. And clivias are one of those that they just keep on giving. So they do need a fair amount of water, but once they're established, they become very water-wise, as I said. And that bright orange under a tree is just absolutely gorgeous.
You know, it's one of those flowers that, look at me, you know, when you come into a shady spot, and more so when it's a dark spot, you know, under the dark spot, you very seldom find color. You find the deep and intense greens, and then if you've let your leaves, fall, and, you know, there's a mulch over it and so forth, and you have this beautiful contrast. So you have this green leaves, and then you have this brilliant colors, and like you said, you know, each one seems to be an individual. I mean, although they are from the same, you know, type of species and so forth, but they look so different. And I think it's just a wonderful, and like you said, all the ticks are there. You know, it's indigenous. They could thrive on neglect. And when you least expect them come, you know, towards the end of winter and the beginning of spring, wow, here we are. Look at us. You've forgotten about us, but we're now here to show you what we look like. Carry on that note. We're going to go for an ad break when we come back.
Already?
Yes, I'm so sorry. Okay. Well, some of you are having breakfast. Some of you are getting to go out into the garden. Mohammed is smiling and says, well, we're definitely not going to go out into the garden for at least another 2 or 3 hours. And we've got some questions that have come in already. If you'd like to join our conversation this morning, 854-1548. Any queries, any questions? We've got a wonderful wonderful guest, and that's Kerry Goodwin sharing so much with us this morning. Hi, good morning, Kerry.
Good morning again.
Thank you very much. Now, before we go up, you have some controversy about something called Roundup, and there's been, you know, millions and millions, you know, given awarded to one particular person who has been affected by Roundup. Now, is Roundup as dangerous as they say it is? It's a Monsanto product, and I know that in South Africa there was some talk about it being recalled. Has that been recalled? Yes, no, and what was its uses?
Okay, I was going to say I haven't heard yet from any of our suppliers that it is going to be recalled. But I will confirm with them later this week. But I think what you have to do, and it's with any pesticide, and I know whenever we sell Roundup, we are very conscious of saying to the customers, you know, you have to use it according to the directions on the label, because Roundup kills anything that is green. And we actually even had a customer write to us this last week that I think one of her neighbors used Roundup, but they used it on a windy day, you know, during this month of August that we were speaking about. And some of the water droplets, they sit in, you know, they get caught in the air and the water vapor that's in the air. And so then it moved across onto one of her plants in her garden. And that, I think, you have to be as conscious. When you're using Roundup, as I said, it does actually kill anything that's green. And what happens is it gets absorbed into the plant. So to me, it has a very short lifespan within your soil or any of those types of, it's not sitting in the environment. But because it gets absorbed into the plant and the plant actually is then going to die because now it's absorbed the poison, if maybe people come into contact with the plant, like what might have happened overseas, you know, and it's consistent and they're not wearing protection. Just like when you use any kind of pesticide that you can, you should be wearing gloves. You should have long sleeve shirts on. Ideally, you would wear a mask. And it's to protect yourself. You know, it's not... You wouldn't be using a poison if you didn't want to get rid of something, whether it be the aphids in your roses or the the weeds in your pavement, because that's what most people are using Roundup for, is they don't want to use boiling hot water and put it on each weed, because that's what you could also use to get rid of the weeds in your garden. They want to use something a little bit stronger, or not in your garden, in your pavement. They want to use something a little bit stronger, and maybe that lasts a bit longer, so then they use something like Roundup. And as I said, I do believe, and please don't shoot me down because of it, I think it does have a purpose, but I think you do actually have to read the instructions. I think some people think, oh, maybe I must double the dosage and then it will work extra fast. Or they forget that it actually is a toxin and we should be protecting our bodies from it. So they don't, you know, and I can say, I do that sometimes. I take this bottle of pesticide that I want to use and I forget to put my gloves on. And it's not that the one time that you use it is going to be harmful to you. It's if you're using it consistently. But you know, also if you're gardening correctly, you shouldn't actually have to use any of the pesticides properly. You know, you should be able to have the ladybugs in your garden that are going to eat the aphids. Because just like we were talking about earlier, and you were saying how maybe some of the listeners aren't in their gardens yet. Let me tell you, the aphids are in our gardens already. And they are munching and sucking on all the new growth that's coming through. But hopefully you've encouraged the ladybugs to come into your garden. And you're saying, well, look, I've got a lovely symbiotic relationship between the ladybugs and the aphids. You know, if I go back to the Roundup, I just think you have to be cautious when you use it. Only use it when you're in desperate times and use it wisely.
And, you know, its use has been, you know, for you know, extermination of weeds. Is that, you know, I'm using very harsh words, extermination, because that's what you wanted to do. So you're talking about weeds. Is that correct? Would that be the only use? And has it gone under another name, Rapid, before that? Was there something like that?
I've never known it under another name.
Okay, that's fine.
Packaging did change.
Okay.
And now, you know, what they did is they realized maybe people were spraying it indiscriminately. And so one of the manufacturers, they almost turned it into a roll-on. So you can be so specific. So you don't actually even spray it. You use it as a roll-on onto the plant that you didn't. So I know... For us, at one place, we had invasive morning glory. And I didn't want to go and spray the whole area with and the only way I could get rid of it, I couldn't pull it up because it was too much, is actually I went and got the roll-on Roundup and I painted it onto the leaves itself, so I didn't infect any other plant. And it was very specific onto that plant, and within a few weeks then my morning glory had gone. And I didn't even put it onto every leaf. I put it onto maybe three leaves, you know, as part of the plant, and then it just got... So you don't even need to use a lot of it. And I think that's where people are using it incorrectly, and that's where the damage is caused.
Thank you for that clarification. And, you know, that leads me to the next point, and then you spoke a little bit about the ladybirds, and I've read an article again about new bee-saving buzz. You know, our bees are under threat, and maybe, whilst Roundup may not be the culprit, but there's lots of things happening. How do we attract bees back into our garden? You know, it's bees and butterflies and dragonflies, yeah. and are there very specific plants that we could do? You know, because these are hawkers and insects. We have different kinds, but if they work within nature, then they're all, you know, useful. So, you know, the aphids come, they do their job, but then you have the ladybirds, they would do. So, you know, if we have that cycle. Yeah. Now, let's talk about a little bit about what plants would attract these bees. And how would you go, and you know, how do we make sure that we protect the environment?
So actually, Life as a Garden's got a beautiful idea of making a butterfly banquet window box. So it's for those people who maybe don't have enough space in their gardens, but they want to attract the bees and the butterflies in. And I read an article once that said the bees prefer colors like the reds and the blues. Actually, it wasn't reds. It was yellows and blues. And that's what they're attracted to. But when I walk through our garden center, as long as you have a healthy flowering plant, I seem to find bees on every single plant, because I think they're just looking for any kind of nectar they can get hold of. And even on the smallest of flowers, so you know, like our little primula flowers,
mm-hmm.
where the flower is almost the size of the bee, they're busy taking as much nectar as they can from that. And when you look onto their legs, you can just see that they're covered with yellow pollen. So for me, you know, there are lots of plants. They particularly love salvia. They love gora. They love the scabiosa. So I'm swapping between indigenous and exotics.
They love the lavender.
Yes, they love lavender.
And I was just thinking about the color you said. You know, I don't know, well, now we're talking about the lavender with the strong smell and maybe the blue. I'm not too sure, but I always find them buzzing around. And I also find, Carrie, you know, that what's it called? It's the indigenous herb. And, you know, it flowers throughout the year. Just slipped my mind.
Achillea? The yarrow?
No, not the yarrow. It's got a purple one. We use it in salads and so forth. Okay, slip my mind. I'll come back to that one.
I'm going to try and think as well.
Okay.
Is it not Tulbachia?
No, not the Tulbachia. It's the one that the other family, the other one that we use in our salads. It's an Italian herb. Shucks, the mind slipped my mind.
Okay. Well, because I was going to say, even with Tulbachia, which is the wild garlic, same purple color, it does attract the bees. And actually, it's wonderful to eat in your salads and in your stir-fries to add new flavor. You can eat the flowers, the foliage. I said to our team, if they are going to start eating the Tulbachia in our nursery, they mustn't eat it during their lunch times, because I don't want them coming back to work smelling of garlic. But they were so excited. They're like, really, we can eat it? I said, yeah. So we actually, you know, and then that forms a dual purpose in your veggie garden, because that's also particularly where you want to encourage plants or blooming flowers. So if you have Tulbachia and it has a dual purpose of being a repellent for some of your unwanted insects, especially those underground, you know, the worms that might be munching on your potatoes or your beetroot or your carrots. And then you can use the flowers as part of in your salads and your stir fries. So, you know, I think you have to look at also, and we've spoken about it before sometimes, some nice companion planting. And then because they're attracting the bees, you're going to get better pollination of your vegetables. Like this year, I was not so great at eating my lettuce in the winter, maybe because it is winter time and so you don't want to make salad. So then I thought, you know what, I'm going to leave my lettuce to flower and I'm going to let it pollinate itself. I'm going to attract the bees and I'm going to let the seeds fall and drop and, you know, I'm going to get lettuce growing up almost, I'm putting in brackets, naturally into my veggie garden. So I think that's also the possibility, is within your vegetable garden or within your own gardens, you know, some of the plants we break, particularly our vegetables and herbs, we break off the flowers because then we get more and more foliage. But every now and again, maybe you should just leave one there to flower to attract the bees. I mean, some of your leafy greens, you know, your mustards and those sort of things, actually the flowers are delicious. You could eat those, not only the leafy part.
Well, I think that's a lot of education that we need to, you know, because people have never thought about, and I'm thinking, when I looked at about, you know, some of the things that we throw away, or we suppose, for example, beetroot, we only eat the beet and not the leaves, you know, things like that, because I think over the years, you know, this is, and now it's come back that these are all healthy and you can eat all of that, but that's for another program. Let's look at something that's come through from, we're talking about, and this is, how do I get rid of termites? Termites with the white bodies and the brown heads, they're all over the lawn.
Oh, no.
I mean, definitely not going to use Roundup.
No, definitely not. Because then you won't have any termites or any lawn left, actually.
Okay.
You might only have the termites and no lawn. They're going to help the termites destroy your lawn. Okay. So, the one that we use most frequently, but and because it's the safest, but I say it with a catch-22, is I often say if you water your lawn very well and you have a very strong lawn, so you fertilize it. Now, this time of the year, you should be, you know, you should have spiked your lawn, raked off all the dead grass from the winter, put on a fertilizer or lawn dressing. So you're starting to create a very healthy lawn. That also prevents your, if your lawn is healthy, if the termites are munching it a little bit, then your lawn will be able to survive. Also, if you are watering your lawn and you're watering it less frequently but for longer, the termites don't like the water. So, you know, if you're watering it only 5 minutes every day, then it's really, the termites can just dig a little bit deeper and they don't really have to worry. Whereas if you're watering it for 20 minutes once a week, then, you know, it's going deeper and the termites are like, oh, this is a lot of hard work to go back up and munch the lawn at the top. So I would also say it's good watering of your lawn or good watering practices of your lawn that will make it uncomfortable for the termites to grow underneath or to live underneath it. And if those natural processes don't work, then unfortunately you do have to go to the pesticide route. And there's some really good pesticides that you can actually just scatter in your lawn. You water them in, and they go down into the soil, and then they release a gas, and that gets rid of the termites.
Thank you very much for that one. We've got a call online. Let's take that one. Assalamu alaikum. Please go ahead.
Hello,
please go ahead.
Hello, assalamu alaikum.
Welcome, salam.
You know, I've got this orchids, and they're growing, they're not growing straight, they're growing like bent. How can I straighten them? And another question, what if I feed my Grenadella tree with?
Okay.
And where will I get the guava tree? Where can I buy a guava tree?
Okay, you've got three questions, but let's look at the orchid. Do you know what particular orchid it is?
Hello?
Do you know what orchid it is? What type of an orchid? What species? Okay, can you describe the
yeah, orchids.
Yeah, no, different types of orchids. But what is the color of your flowers?
It's got flowers. It's growing. Not straight.
Yeah, but what is the color of the flower? You're trying to decide to just check what type of an orchid you've got. Is it indoors or outdoors?
Sorry.
Is it indoors or outdoors?
Indoor.
Okay, we'll try and answer those. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Kerry, I'm not too sure the type of orchid, okay. But more would be the ones that everybody's now have in their homes, and it's not growing straight. Is there a way of straightening, or is that the natural growth of an orchid?
I was going to say, the orchids do tend to grow naturally not straight, and that's why you could go into your local garden center, and they have, you know, when you buy your orchids as well, they have those little sticks in them, or you can use those society sticks that you buy from Pick and Pay, and you put it in, and almost you're just going to gently, because luckily the orchid stems are quite pliable, they're soft, so if you attach it to the stick, you know, just using a little bit of, I would have said now I was going to use from the kids, I would go into the kids' cupboard, and a little bit of, not wire, but like a plastic wire.
Okay.
Or a little tiny piece of plastic, and then you just attach it to the stem, and you slowly try and encourage it to grow straight against the skewer or the stick that you've put into the orchids. So as I say, when you see them in the shops, that's what they have done to them. They said to them, listen, you are going to grow straight. It could also be that when you, you know, if your orchids are finished flowering and then you cut them, you normally cut them three nodes up. So as soon as you cut them, that new stem that you've cut, you actually do want to put it against some sort of a skewer or a stick so that it is able to grow straight, because otherwise it is going to ramble a little bit. Because naturally they would occur, you know, in trees and moist environments where their roots and their stems, I just want to say they're loose. They're not, the orchids are generally, in nature, they're not structured. And we as humans are saying to them, you know, we want you to look beautiful in our flower pots, in our home, in our lounge, so you need to look straight. And so that's why use the skewers and just gently try and train it a little bit, each, you know, maybe 2-3 centimeters at a time. You can even get those little orchid clips. So one side clips onto the stem and the other side clips onto the stick. And you can get those clips to train it to grow up the stick, which is obviously straight.
I was just thinking about the styes that you get, you know, the ones that you know, luggage styes or something, those black ones. Maybe you could try that, but don't be too harsh because you could perhaps damage the orchid. Is that correct?
Yeah. No, absolutely. Just do it very gently and do a little bit at a time. So, you know, as I say, don't try and get the whole stem straight away. Just maybe start at the bottom and try 2 centimeters, and then as it goes up and becomes straighter, it should straighten up. I mean, they are quite... I wouldn't say not listen, but they do work for us. They will become straight over time. Just give them a chance.
The granadilla is one, you know.
Well, the granadilla is a great one, actually, because at this time of the year, you want to be feeding your plants, and we look to feed them something that's going to, you know, promote the fruiting and the flowering, and that's anything that's high in potassium, which is the last number of your fertilizer bag. And some of our fertilizer, most of the fertilizer companies have now encouraged that they'll either say flower and fruit, or they'll say they'll be in a beautiful red packet, which full of flowers. So if you don't know, like, the NPK and the nitrogen, potassium, and nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, then you just look for the packet that's red, and that kind of says to you, oh, it's going to be for flowering and fruit. That's the one I should be putting. So I would be doing that for the for all my fruiting and flowering plants at the moment, is giving them, you know, a closed handful of 315, or as I say, fruit and flowers, something like that that's going to say to them, oh, it's springtime, and you need to get ready to start producing fruit and flowers for me soon, and I'm helping you do that with these nutrients.
Just a little bit about granadillas. I find they eventually become very invasive. You've got to control that. Is that correct?
It's absolutely. Actually, the granadilla is on the invasive list in certain provinces. And I know we have a grower who, sadly, he can't sell granadillas to Gauteng anymore because he lives in Northwest and is not allowed to cross borders. So you do have to watch out with granadillas. And in Gauteng, we are still able to sell them. And I think it's because we have a frosty environment. So often they can't become too invasive because the frost is going to kill them. And it's generally an urban environment. But in your rural environments, granadillas are actually quite unwanted and should rather not be grown there because of their invasive properties.
And is that the same thing for guava? Is that also an invasive list?
Yes. It's so sad for me because I actually even had a customer this week asking for guava. But guava, you won't find it in any of the garden centers throughout the country. It is a very invasive plant. And so, unfortunately, we wouldn't be able to sell it or grow it. You know, the farmers who grow the guavas that we buy in the shopping centers actually have permits from the government to say we are allowed to use this amount of space, this is the number of guavas that we produce. And it's all very controlled. But if you have a guava tree, ideally, actually, you shouldn't be having them in your home.
I know some people have them.
I'm so sorry with this, you know, because you actually, when it comes to all the fruit and vegetables, you just want everything in your garden. And we really do want to try and grow our own. That's what we're encouraging people to do. But there's certain plants where actually they have to be controlled, because once they become wild in the environment, they can just cause so much damage.
Well, that brings us almost to the end, but we've got to know before we've got. Has the time arrived for feeding all garden plants and house on trail mix, etc., etc.?
Yes, yes, your plants will love you. So this, I want to say now in September, go out and get your fertilizers and your food, and, you know, maybe you've been making compost during the winter, but go and feed your garden and say to it, wake up, it's time, get blooming.
Yes, I think we should be doing that. Now, Curry, you know, we also have a wonderful, you know, space here in South Africa where Mother Nature puts us most beautiful display, and that's out in the out towards the Karoo side. Do you know something about that area and the nature reserve? You know, we have all our plants now in such gorgeous display.
Yes, I was going to say, you know, I think it's actually particularly the Karoo, the botanical gardens there, but any of our botanical gardens, you know, as people are moving more into flats and those sort of things, they need to go and explore, like you say, in our natural environment. So go into our botanical gardens. I love when I go and look at the flowers there, you always think like in these sandy, barren patches, there's nothing to see. But there is plenty. You just normally have to get on your hands and knees because it's much smaller. It's not as in your face as in our urban environments, the plants. But there is so much living there that you just have to take the time and open your eyes and, as I say, probably be on your hands and knees, and you can see the diversity that is in those areas that we think are almost desert-like.
And now we're coming, you know, it's also, I beg your pardon, when we come to the beginning of September, then it's also Arbor time, and you know, it's no longer Arbor day and Arbor week, it's Arbor month, and
yes,
we've identified certain plants. I think they have identified certain trees. I think it's two this year I was looking up. And could you tell us about the tree and what are its uses and benefits?
So the common tree, because it's normally a common tree and a rare tree, the common tree this year, which I'm so excited about, is our national tree, which is the podocarpus. And you get the three different types. You get Podocarpus latifolius, Hinkali, and Fulcatus.
And for us common people, what would it be known as? Is it
Yellowwood.
The Yellowwood,
sorry.
Yes. I
always get so confused.
Yes, it's
the
Yellowwood. That's great.
And those are just beautiful trees. I always think that we don't often think that they're going to get very big. But they do. We had a customer yesterday, he bought me photos to show me of his Yellowwood in his garden, which sadly he might have to remove because it's got so big, but he's been there for over 30 years. But it's also, you know, it's a full evergreen foliage tree that I know I have it in a pot on my patio, and it kind of just blocks the noise of some of my neighbors sometimes. So I will eventually have to go and give the pot to somebody who has a bigger garden to be able to plant it in. But at the moment, the pot is restricting its growth, and it's just, as I say, I love the fact that it's evergreen, and there's lots and lots of foliage on it, and it's our national tree. So I think at this year, you know, it's an easy tree. Most of the garden centers will have one. Anybody could go, and even if it's not for your own garden, it's one of those trees that are hardy, they are survivors. So you could go and plant them maybe at your local school or in your local park. So, you know, maybe when we come to giving back, the Yellowwood is a really lovely tree that's going to, I'd like to say, live forever. It has a long lifespan. So you could leave your legacy by planting a Yellowwood.
And what is the other one? That's the one and the other.
And then the other one is Boschia albatronca, which is actually the shepherd's tree.
That's the one with all the leaves right through from top to bottom.
Yes. And that one you actually find more, I don't think I've ever seen it unless it's a specific tree nursery or indigenous nursery, but they grow fantastically in our game reserves and in the felt regions. So they have a lot of cultural and heritage properties, but it's not something that generally people grow in our gardens. I don't know why.
But well, I must say to you,
I've never seen it in a customer's garden before.
It looks like a teepee, you know, it looks like a Red Indian tin. That's what it gives me, the impression that that's the way it's shaped.
Yeah.
Okay, so, Carrie, we unfortunately have to leave it here. I thought we were going to still chat about gardening, small gardens, patio gardens, fruit, food gardens, but it's almost time for the news and we're going to chat.
Goodness.
You take care, Carrie. Thank you very much for being on the program, and we'll chat to you. And we'll chat to you some other time. You take care.
Have a lovely day.
Thanks, Tom. Bye-bye. And that was Carrie Goodwin, and she's telling us about what should be done in the garden this time of the year. Inshallah, until we meet again. Coming up next is the news. Stay tuned.